You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modgepodge. Whole Modgepodge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modgepodge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York. You are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe in the Blue Room. We're cooking with Ben Bear. David Goss still out cavorting around England. Somewhere in the rolling hills and out in the octagon, none other than Matt, the armchair analyst Doyle. Boys, how's it going? Do you feel like a regular now, Ben? Do you feel like we're allowing you to cook the proper amount of times per week?
I'm always a regular, in my mind at least.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true or not, but in my mind, I'm always a regular.
Hey, you know what? Whatever is in your own mind, you know, you can lean on that. Lean on that. Think
don't
of it
let
that
your
way.
Don't let your dreams be dreams.
That's right.
I think is what you're looking to say.
And he's in the blue room.
Exactly.
So dreams are reality. It is a great room.
It's better than the green room.
The green room is a little bit tight. I will give you that. We got a big show coming up today. Of course, you missed us on Memorial Day. Our thoughts, our prayers, our just shout outs, everything goes to folks who have served this country, served their country, made the ultimate sacrifice. My grandfather served in World War II. I'm sure many of your family members, friends, maybe yourself have done this as well. We want to thank you for that service. We want to thank you as well for listening to Extra Time Radio. We love talking soccer with you, and we're going to do it again today, of course. Some news to run down. The 2017 MLS All-Star Fan 11 presented by Target is out to be voted on. You can cast your ballot, and you can do it every single day, which means that Orlando City are basically going to like break their index fingers voting for Joe Bendick. We expect that to happen. We'll give you our ballots as well as kind of go over our best 11 for the season so far to take stock of what's gone down in Major League Soccer. Of course, we're going to talk MLS. The Magic Unicorn is back. Mauro Diaz, after 7 months on the mend with that Achilles injury, is already back, which is incredible and makes me very, very happy. I'm sure it does the same for Doyle. We'll talk about the rivalry fun that went down in Toronto, Seattle, San Jose, and Dallas. And then Bruce Arena announced his U.S. national team roster for those big games against Trinidad and Tobago and Mexico at Azteca. Mexico at Azteca, one of the biggest games of the World Cup qualifying cycle. We'll talk over that roster, see where we think that team is going. And, of course, got to download the MLS app to get all the coverage and to vote on the All-Star team. That ballot for the first 7 or so days, it's only on the MLS app. So go download that thing and get all your news right at the tips of your fingers. I use it every single week, every single weekend, watching MLS Live, getting the headlines, getting the stats, the standings, the scores, even Extra Time Radio, although that'd be really weird if I was listening to myself. I don't. I swear I don't. Guys, let's get into it. Let's get into the ballots. And I put mine out, and I'm already being abused on Twitter for it. I'll just put it down right here, my goalkeeper, and you get to pick 10 here on the Fan 11. The 11th is via the EA Sports More Than a Vote Challenge, which basically means you go play FIFA. If you score a goal, that player gets one vote. The player with the most goals slash votes at the end of this thing, that would be June 30th, will get a spot on the Fan 11.
Go out there and just score a million goals like Tyler Adams.
Yes, get Tyler. Who would you, if you were going to try to push somebody that you know is not going to make it on this Fan 11?
That I know is not going to make it?
Right. Who are you going
Alan
to? Alan Gordon.
100%.
Oh, that
not
is
even
a really
close.
Good call.
Just
all right,
just
I'm glad we're letting him cook, Weedy.
Yeah, all right.
He just passed the first test. That was really good, Ben. You made me happy.
Thank you, Doyle, for your confirmation.
All right, shh.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that's enough. All right, let's start at goalkeeper. I'll start with my ballot. You guys can chime in here. I think it's Tim Melia. I think there's no doubt about who's been the best goalkeeper in MLS so far this season. I was hanging out with Dan Kennedy the other day. He was doing MLS Match Day Live with us, and he was praising Tim Melia. Now, Dan is a little bit biased. Tim Melia was on Chivas USA when he was there. They're both former GOATs, but if you look at what he's done this season, if you look at their defensive record, it's not all Ike Opara. It's not all Matt Beisler. It's not all Graham Zeus here, Sesanovic. This guy's been making huge saves. I'm curious if you guys went a different direction. Are we 3 for Melia right here?
I'm 100% on the Melia hype train.
Is it a hype train? I don't know. I think it's more like
The numbers speak for themselves. I actually, if you go look at the Colorado SKC preview I wrote up this past weekend, I had a bunch of statistics in there about why he's been the best goalkeeper in MLS this year, including, you know, not the best statistic, but save percentage from shots inside the box, His expected goals numbers are off the charts. He's just been incredible.
He's the only goalkeeper with less than one goals against average this year. Regular goalkeeper. He has been everything they've asked for. And it goes back to Doyle, the fact that you don't need to go out and spend a ton of money on a goalkeeper. There are a lot of these guys just waiting for opportunities. He was a pool goalkeeper for years.
Yeah, he was. And it's one of those great stories to see him in his 30s now finally nail down this job and get some recognition. He's my vote as well. I will say this. I still think Bill Hamid and Jesse Gonzalez have the highest upsides of any keeper in MLS, and Hamid has showed it the last 2 weeks, and Gonzalez has been very good since winning the job from Chris Seitz, but neither has been as consistent from game one as Melia has been this year.
By the way, that Jesse Gonzalez save in the Texas Derby, are you kidding me? He went hockey. He went big, and you know who called that game? Dan Kennedy. Praised it.
Going from Match Day Live to national TV broadcast.
Yeah, look, it's a downgrade for him. But I think he's going to survive. We'll get him back on MLS Match Day Live. In case you don't know what that is, every Sunday and sometimes different days, myself, Dave Gosser, perhaps a fill-in host, gets on and we wrap the whole weekend up. If you're looking for MLS, highlights, hot takes, hype train, banter, all that stuff, we wrap up the weekend in a nice, pretty package for you. Let's hit the back line here. You got three defenders to vote on in the All-Star Fan 11 presented by Target. I'm going with Kansas City for one of the three. I'm going Ike Opara, Matt Hedges, and then Jovan Jones. I thought Hedges and Opara, those were easy ones for me. Jovan Jones, felt like I had to get a fullback in there somewhere. There's a lot of names you could throw in that conversation. I think Justin Morrow probably belongs in that conversation. Raheem Edwards, it's hard. Those two have kind of split time, and Morrow's moved inside a little bit for Toronto because of injuries. But those are my three. I think there are cases for others to be made. Are you guys going different directions?
The thing about Morrow, and I picked Morrow as my third, is that if you're going to do a best 11, there's almost not a spot for him because he's played all over. He's played as a wing back. He's played as a fullback. He's played as a center back. In both a back three and a little bit in a back four. So in a best 11, you almost can't pick him because he hasn't been the best or most consistent in any one spot. But in this all-star vote, he has to have a place on the team because he has been the ever-present guy for the best team in the league. So I was happy to get a chance finally to give Justin Morrow some depth because he keeps getting left out of best 11s and U.S. national team camps, which is a shame because he's been so good for so long.
You know, it's perfect in the Fan 11. People will complain about the formation. They always do. They'll say, hey, this is not a team that you could go actually put on the field in that 3-4-3.
And we should say that this is actually not the team that would be the starting 11.
Yeah, look,
against Real Madrid.
Sure. That is a good point. Look, they're 24 players will be named to the All-Star team, and it's not just the Fan 11 that pushes in there. Veljko Panovic, who's the head coach of the Fire and will be the head coach of the MLS All-Stars, will also have an opportunity to fill that out. And then Don Garber, as always, will get his two commissioner picks to bring that roster out. That's all agreed on by the CBA. So when you're thinking about voting here, don't think about this as necessarily the team that will take the field. Just think of it as the 10 guys that you really want to push. You didn't chime in here, so I'm assuming you're on the Morrow bandwagon as well?
Yeah, to Opara, Hedges, and Morrow. I think the first two, not really easy, but, you know, pretty easy. And then Morrow, I just think, you know, he has been really, you know, as Doyle said, versatility. He's been very, very good. I think he's just a better defender than Jovan Jones. Jovan Jones has that going forward, but so does Morrow. How many? I think he has
three goals. Yeah.
And Jovan Jones is five. I mean, he has that. So
right.
I think he's been a better
defender. Well, the fact is, you'll get Toronto FC, Betashore, Edwards, Morrow, the guys that they've played wide in this kind of five-man back line, they've been really, really good, and they have to be because they have to fill a lot of holes both in attack and defense.
And a little spoiler, because I have no other Toronto players on my Fan 11, so like you need to give some depth to the best team in the league. There needs to be a guy from the best team in the league.
And look, I think there's people on Twitter already telling me, like, I put this out and they said, hey, Sporting KC should have that whole back line, and that's a homer way of looking at it. And I know some of you at home think I am that for Kansas City, but I would throw a Graham Zusi out there like a right back if you're going a four-man back line. I think he deserves to be in that conversation. A Scott Sutter in Orlando. I mean, there's a number of guys that are in the conversation, but ultimately you got to pick 10, and you can only pick four midfielders, and this is where it starts to get a little bit tough here. I'm going to start with I don't have a true defensive midfielder on this team. That's my first First little caveat there, but on my best 11, I have Alexander Ring, despite the fact that Atlanta went out there and dropped one on NYCFC this weekend. So my midfield goes like this. It's Alessandrini out in L.A., Justin Miram. Those are my two wingers, wide players. And in the middle, Kellen Acosta, who I think has been the best box-to-box midfielder in MLS this year, bar none, and Victor Vasquez. Look, Miguel Almiron, I wanted to stick him in there after Sunday, but I had to stick to my guns, had to stick with Victor Vasquez. I think he's elevated what was perhaps the best team in the league to, I think, no doubt the best in Toronto FC so far.
Well, I mean, I have Alessandrini, I have Acosta, so we agree there. I, like a true fan, like a true pundit, picked a defensive midfielder.
Okay.
Because that's what you're supposed to do. You know, you gotta honor the guys who don't get on the stat sheet.
Sure, this is the fan 11, not the Ben Bear 11.
It's a little bit of a both.
Okay.
This is Ben Bear's fan 11.
Sure, that's true.
Same thing.
I'll give it to you.
My D-mid is Dax. I just think all you have to do is look at, you know, the Red Bulls have kind of their points per game. They're still like fourth to fifth in the East. They're still playing pretty well, but they're not at that level they were the past couple of years. I think that has a lot to do with a guy like Dax. I mean, obviously they've been missing Tyler Adams recently, but just the way he puts his foot on the game, he just controls the entire flow of the game. I mean, wherever he's been the past 3 or 4 years, he just controls the game. He's doing that with Chicago, and that's the reason that they're in second place.
All right, outside Dax, who's your fourth?
Dude is just electric. I just want to see him on the field.
Yeah, that's a good point. Doyle, are you splitting the difference here? Do you have new faces to give to us?
I had no new faces, but a different sort of orientation. I went with Ring over Dax as the D-mid, and no disrespect to Dax, who has been great, as Ben said, but Ring has elevated what was a pretty terrible defensive team last year into one of the better defensive teams in the league, despite getting stomped this past weekend. Almiron, who has more than lived up to his billing. Miram, who I think one of the most bizarre decisions in the league this year was Greg Berhalter taking Miram off before halftime this past weekend. And Vasquez, who has, I think, what, 3 or 4 goals and 8 or 9 assists and has been just one of those classic throwback-style number 10s who sits in the middle and pulls the strings, and I love guys like that. They're kind of like Pepe Le Pew. They never look like they're moving all that fast, but they're just always in the right spot at the right time. Vasquez has just been a joy to watch.
I think it says a lot about what he's done, and that the best of Sebastian Giovinco has yet to come this season. He has not been at his MVP caliber, best player in the league, no doubt, form. We haven't really seen that from him. It's injuries, it's a variety of things. But with Victor Vasquez there, they've picked it up, and they have not missed a beat. At the top of the Supporters Shield standings, rolling along, you mentioned that Justin Miram substitution, 5-0 at BMO Field on Friday night. Kurasi got blown off the pitch without Giovinco, without Josie being on the field. It was an incredible performance from Toronto FC. Before we go to forwards, I want to talk about incredible performances in a game that didn't have 5 goals, no goals in the Texas Derby to finish off Sunday night, but Kellen Acosta Doyle. This was one of those games where you're watching it, and if you're watching it closely, and you're watching individuals, which is a lot of times what I like to do in games, I'm going to watch Kellen Acosta. I'm just going to see what he does, see how he plays. Those line-breaking passes that we like to talk about with Dax McCarty, he was pinging those things all night long. And that free kick that Tyler Derrick took out of the top corner, I mean, that was class. I said this kid is the best box-to-box player in the league right now, and nobody batted an eye at this table. Is that the case? Do you agree with me?
I think he probably is. I want him to find the ball a little bit more. I'm not sure that his usage rate is as high as I want it to be. But his growth as a game-changing two-way player over the last 2 years has been pretty remarkable. And he's a guy that FC Dallas have been correct to build around over the past 7 months with Mauro Diaz out. And now that we'll get to see both of them in that same midfield, and hopefully Carlos Grezo gets his groove back a little bit, I see Dallas have a lot of upside still for a team that is top of the West in terms of points per game already. They can be very, very good offensively now in a way they haven't been.
That's some balance in the midfield. That's going to be a lot of fun to watch coming up. Mauro Diaz easing his way back, came back from that Achilles injury this weekend as a substitute in that 0-0 draw. Let's go up top. Of course, you only get the two choices here. I went with the golden boot leader right now, Nemanja Nikolic, even though he killed me on Thursday night, bricked a penalty, bricked a bunch of other chances. He's still at the top of the golden boot charts, but my fantasy team mourned those misses because I gave him the C, the captain's armband. But I think he deserves to be there. I think he could probably have 15, 16, 17 goals this year if he's a little bit more efficient. And may yet be that he becomes more efficient, or it may yet be that he hits a little bit of a cold streak. But for now, for right now, he's there. And then I have David Villa. I find it hard to leave Villa off this list with what he does on a game-to-game basis. We didn't really see that against Atlanta, but it's the numbers. It's the leadership factor he brings to that team. It's the whole package. I think David Villa deserves to be there. We have any other names, or is everybody following along?
What did you guys think of David Villa going at Miguel Almiron this past weekend?
I liked it.
I mean, that was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with Almiron taking his sweet time. Like, you drop two goals again, you almost get the Hattie, you've got the lead. Come on, you're not going to run off the field.
I loved everything about that. I loved that that slow walk from Almiron and Villa getting all heated. That was great.
Yeah, didn't he covered a significant distance to get there later on in the game to make his voice heard? I mean, yeah, that was a great moment. One of those MLS moments you only catch if you're watching all the games and not looking at the stats. Are you guys with Villa and Nikolic here? I mean, we have people on Twitter telling me Christian Ramirez should be there. Kurt Larson, unsurprisingly, says Jozy Altidore.
I mean, there's no arguments for me. You had the top goal scorer in the league and basically the top player in the league. It's not really hard to pick for me.
I looked at you guys' picks beforehand, and I decided to sub CJ Sapong in there for Villa just to be a contrarian. Sapong has been as important to his team as almost, I think, any player in the league has been to their particular team. And he's been one of the top forwards in the league as well. Philadelphia would have like 3 points if not for CJ Sapong, so I think he needed a shout.
I think Christian Ramirez has a shout in there. You see Miguel Ibarra on the Christian Ramirez for U.S. Men's National Team train on Twitter. We will talk about that a little bit in the second segment. Remember, we got that roster coming up for you, all the breakdown, all our thoughts. Just about 2 weeks out here before the U.S. National Team gets back at it in the Hex. Those are our fan 11s. Go check out my best 11 at MLSsoccer.com. Go cast your vote. You can cast your vote every single day, and every vote is basically an entry for a all-expenses-paid VIP trip to Chicago for that game on August 2nd. Real Madrid coming to Soldier Field to take on the MLS All-Stars. It's all presented by Target. It's going to be a lot of fun. Remember, go vote on the MLS app. That's the only place to do it right now, the 2017 MLS All-Star Fan 11 presented by Target. Your voice can be heard. Let's talk a little bit about the weekend here. I mentioned FC Dallas and Houston getting that 0-0 draw. Good news, Magic Unicorn is back. I mean, that almost feels like a miracle to me that he'd be able to get back this quickly from injury that keeps people out for a year plus at times. Is there any worry in your mind, Doyle, or is there any thought to how Oscar Pereja kind of eases him back in? How do you think they'll do this? How should they do it?
Like you, I'm stunned at how quick this has been, and he's not the only one. Connor Lade, I think, had a 6-month recovery or maybe 6.5-month recovery from his Achilles injury as well. Perhaps the technology in rehab has improved substantially over the last couple of years. But I remember when this type of injury was, you're looking at 12 to 14 months. So just to see both those guys, but especially Diaz, who is every neutral's favorite player in the league, I think what we saw this past weekend with him coming on for the last 10 or 12 minutes, to me, it makes sense to just keep doing something like that. Maybe next weekend it's 20 minutes. Maybe the weekend after that it's 25 or 30, and just sort of ease him into it. However, there is obviously going to be more pressure on FC Dallas, specifically in attack going forward, because they're going to be without Walker Zimmerman for 2 months. And they do not have anything like him in reserve. And by the way, it looks like Matt Hedges is going to be with the national team as well. So I don't think FC Dallas is going to be anywhere near the sort of airtight defense that they've been thus far this year.
Yeah, Oscar Pereira is probably going to get them through this stretch. If you weren't watching on Sunday night, Walker Zimmerman left that game in the first half. Weird collision between himself and Albert Elise. Elise honestly looked out of control, just at full speed. And Zimmerman kind of sticks his leg out in a challenge and just – was it knee to knee? I don't know. Either way,
that rolled into it.
Yeah, that knee just kind of buckled, and it was a tough moment. He's been diagnosed with an MCL strain, which honestly is good news because I watched that. I watched him try to walk, and I immediately thought, this is bad. This is not good at all. This is a guy that's embarking on his U.S. national team career. He's become one of the best central defenders in the league. He was right on the outside of my Fan 11 ballot, and have this happen. That's a big blow.
He's probably going to miss the Gold Cup because of this, if I had to guess. And then, I mean, they really don't have another center back. They have, like, one other center back on the roster. You're probably looking at
– maybe Minor Figueroa moves in.
Minor Figueroa's probably to move in. You could see Atiba Harris. You could see the homegrown – Aaron Guillen. Walker Hume, we got to start this week. There's not really much else.
Yeah, it's a tough time right now, but you figure they'll find a way to get through it. They did without Mauro Diaz here for a while, as well as we roll through the rest of the weekend here. LA Galaxy, we were all woe is me. We were worried. We were saying, could this team recover, which is, I guess, what we do because you take it week by week and the narrative changes. Well, the narrative has completely flip-flopped with the Galaxy right now. They're back above the playoff line. They're unbeaten in five. They've won three straight road games since that Chicago Fire, Yoel Van Dam yanking. Look, Jermaine Jones has been gone. They've gotten wins. They got another one this weekend in the Cali Classico, a very, very impressive one, 4-2 in San Jose. Roman Alessandrini with maybe the best pass of the weekend. There were a number of candidates there. The Giovanni Dos Santos at the back post for a slam dunk header. Two goals for Gio in this one, and they're doing it while Jesse Zardes isn't really producing at all on the attacking end. Doyle, right now it feels like this team's potential is even higher, whereas 3-4 weeks ago it felt like they were in a tailspin.
It definitely did, and I think simplifying the central midfield has helped them a lot. Jones was taking up the types of spaces that Dos Santos likes to work in, and with him being out, Gio has more room. And if you look back at the buildup to that penalty that they won to sort of reset the game against San Jose, that was all from Gio dropping back and taking up those types of number 10 spaces and then getting forward. And that's the same thing he did against Minnesota as well when he scored that just incredible goal. And this has been the story for LA. They've outscored teams 11-4 in the last seven halves since Van Damme was yanked and since Jones went out. And you're right that Zardes isn't producing, but he doesn't need to. He just needs to sort of lead the line, push opposing central defenders back, and create that room underneath for Dos Santos to work in. So between Gio and Alessandrini, they're going to generate plenty of attack, and they just need the guys behind them to be simple and to be effective, and that's what they've gotten.
Jesse Zardes not on this U.S. national team roster for upcoming World Cup qualifiers in that friendly against Venezuela. Still trying to find his way back into form. If you haven't read a piece by Kevin Baxter in the LA Times, go check that out. It's basically about Jesse and his community, Hawthorne, California, and what he's been up to. We have a great interview for you coming up on Father's Day with Jesse. We spent some time with him in New Jersey, but he is doing some really incredible stuff on the community service side, and you might groan when I say that. That's important. And what he's doing in his hometown is really, really cool. Go check that out. Some worries, though, now for Orlando and Portland, who at the beginning of the season were flying high. Looked like two of the best team in the league, maybe the best team in the East, maybe the best team in the West. Well, now Orlando are 6 without a win, 4 losses in that span. They lose in Minnesota on a scrappy goal from Christian Ramirez. Portland are 5 without a win with 3 losses. They lose 1-0 to Seattle in that Cascadia Cup match on Saturday on Big Fox, Bart Simpson Fox. Who's in more trouble, guys? Who should be more worried about their dip in form? By the way, Jamie Goldberg out in Portland is reporting that center back is coming in. Larrys Mabiala, who is a Congo international, has played in Turkey for a while. Yeah, appreciate that. Yeah, give me a little props there.
I mean, I have no idea if that's right.
Yeah, I don't either. So he may fill a hole there in the center of defense for Portland, but I got to imagine these teams are the fan bases especially are sitting there wondering what happened.
To me, it's Orlando. Portland, I just think they've dealt with some injuries, and they've been, you know, just trying to get these guys, the attack together. We know they've been struggling with injuries and, you know, inconsistency on the back line, which is, I don't know. I just feel like
those guys have the
potential to be. We've seen those guys play so well in this league that we'll see it again. The attack just needs to get together. We've seen Chara was out this weekend. The front six is going to get it together. Orlando, we've just seen a dip in form. What they built this entire first run on is defense, and we've seen a dip in form in that a bit. And they're not scoring any goals. And Kaká is either out or he's not playing well or one of those two. I just don't see the easiest path for Orlando to get back where they were. I can't with Portland.
Well, I think that for part of it with Orlando is that they had a very crowded month. I mean, over the last 30 days, I think they had eight games, which is a lot. And the only team in the league that could handle a workload like that is Toronto FC. Orlando City didn't have anything approaching that kind of depth, and it wore them down just playing Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. And that's what we're seeing here. With Portland, I agree with you. I think that Portland are in better shape to move forward, especially because Caleb Porter's teams have a history of sort of playing better as the season goes on. But the real worry is that they have been a worse team defensively since Ridgewell and Vitas came back. And those are two guys who are surefire starters and who are expected to be sort of the rocks that back line is built upon, and it hasn't been the case. And I think partially you have to wonder if Vitas can do it defensively in this league, because he hasn't shown that he has that ability. And with Ridgewell, he hasn't looked the same guy since about August of last year. He has not looked like a lead the back line central defender. And at some point it stops being a phase and it starts being just who he is. So if I'm Portland, that's what I'm most concerned about.
Let us know what you think. Hit us up with the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0MLS. We had a Sounders fan call in doing a little bit of trolling, had some questions about Darlington Nagbe. We'll get to that when we hit the Hot Take Hotline in segment three. Coming up in just a second, that U.S. national team roster, we'll break it all down for you. Before we get out of MLS, though, I want to talk about Julian Gressel. I think you have to talk about this kid. We've been talking about Miguel Almirón. I guess Gressel's not exactly a kid. I think he's pushing 24 here, but comes out in the draft, I think was the most impressive player at the Combine, which probably wasn't a surprise outside of Daniel Johnson, of course, Doyle, who had you wowed and in a tizzy. But he's been maybe the best draft pick because you picked up a guy who was mature, technically and tactically advanced, and is straight up producing right now for Tata Martino. They moved him out to the wing. He looks like a game changer, and he looks like a guy who's going to give defenses fits for the rest of the year and many years after that.
They used him as a center forward. They used him on the wing, and they used him as a central midfielder in college at Providence. And he has already played all three of those spots for Atlanta and played them well. He's, like you said, he's older. He'll turn 24 in December. I mean, he's actually 2 months older than Almirón, so this isn't a kid. But I think it speaks to the ability to continue to find difference-making talent via the draft. And more of these guys like Gressel or like Fabian Erbers, like Dom Dwyer, of course, guys who, for whatever reason, weren't able to stick with the professional clubs they developed at, are finding homes in college and then making their way to MLS, and it only makes the league better.
I'm going to avoid making a Leo Stoltz reference right now, which is exactly what I have done. That's it for us on MLS. We're going to go to the U.S. national team in a break. If you have any thoughts, comments, questions, whatever it is, at Extra Time Radio on Twitter, extratime@mlssoccer.com. If email is more your thing, or the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0MLS.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
this is Tim Howard, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio. So just know that I want you back. Just know that I want you back.
Just know that I want you back. Back now on Extra Time, the radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. With me, Ben Baer in the blue room, out in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. We were talking MLS, and I, you know, it slipped my mind. There are a ton of games coming up midweek. Four in MLS on Wednesday, Crew SC, Seattle, NYCFC, New England, Orlando, D.C., Houston, Real Salt Lake. And also on Tuesday, Wednesday, the second legs of those Canadian Championship semifinals. Montreal hosting Vancouver, Toronto FC hosting the Ottawa Fury. Both of the home teams have 1-2 deficits here, but both have road goals, so have a good chance there. Go check those out. All the coverage on the MLSsoccer.com app. Download that for free. You can also vote for your Fan 11 on there for the MLS All-Star Game. Let us know who's on yours. Hit us up with a screenshot. We'd love to see who you're pushing for that game on August 2nd against Real Madrid. Let's talk U.S. national team, because the roster is out. The roster for Venezuela, that'd be a friendly to get ready for two big games. Trinidad Tobago gets us going on June 8th, and then on June 11th they head down to Azteca. Massive games for Bruce Arena and the guys. Of the 26 players he called in, 15 come out of MLS, 20 have MLS experience. It wasn't one with many surprises, Doyle. You look from front to back. I mean, the goalkeepers are what you'd expect here. Guzan, Howard, Raimondo, Horvath, DeMarcus Beasley, Matt Beisler, John Brooks, Jeff Cameron, Omar Gonzalez, Matt Hedges, Tim Ream, Sueño, Jorge Villafana, DeAndre Yedlin, Graham Zusi in the back. In the midfield, Kellen Acosta, Paul Areola, maybe a little question mark there. We'll get back to that one. Alejandro Bedoya, Michael Bradley, Fabian Johnson, Dax McCarty, Darlington Nagbe, and Christian Pulisic, who is going to be there for decades to come, I would expect. Josie Altidore, Clint Dempsey, Jordan Morris, Bobby Wood round us out. I'm looking for question marks. We used to do this show when Jurgen's rosters would come out, and it would just be a bloodbath. And now I'm having trouble shooting holes in this thing.
I think the only two that kind of lead me to have any sort of question is no Eric Lehigh, which surprises me a little bit, because he's a good, experienced fullback who can play on either side. And I thought he would be ahead of Timmy Chandler in the pecking order, but clearly he wasn't. And then once Chandler got hurt and had to pull out, the horror, Lehigh wasn't even called in as a replacement. So that leads me to believe that he and probably Danny Williams will be integrated for the Gold Cup this summer. And then the other thing was Christian Pulisic is the only real number 10 on this team. There's no Sasha Kljestan, no Benny Failhaber, no Lee Wynn, all three of whom are playing pretty good soccer. The fact that there's only one guy who could play that role, but there are actually three or four guys who can play wide, Pulisic being one, but Paul Areola, Fabian Johnson's back, and Darlington Nagbe. That leads me to believe that Bruce is maybe leaning towards playing a flatter 4-4-2, or maybe sort of a box midfield, rather than the 4-3-1-2 or the 4-1-3-2, if you want to call it that, that we played against Honduras. So I'm trying to read the tea leaves a little bit here. Bruce doesn't give a lot away with the words that he says, but I think maybe he's tipped his hand a little bit here in terms of the formation that he's going to play. I do think this is going to be kind of a flatter 4-4-2.
They got a run out starting on Saturday against Venezuela. That one's in Salt Lake City at the Riot. 10 p.m. Eastern on FS1, Univision, and UDN. And then on Thursday in Colorado, Commerce City, Trinidad, Tobago, and then they go to Mexico, to Azteca on Sunday. That makes three high-altitude games for this team. They're obviously preparing for Azteca, preparing for that big game, one of the biggest, as I said, in the Hex, every single go-round. But it's not the one, Ben, that really kind of matters here, it seems like, because in Azteca, look, they've gotten two draws out of this in World Cup qualifying. Those were good. They got one in the last cycle. They got the win, the friendly, of course, a while back. Roscoe Fiscal with the goal in that one. Right now, though, the U.S. needs points. And they need points at home. With four games gone in the Hex, after Trinidad and Tobago will be in the middle point officially. U.S. in fourth place. The top three, of course, get automatic bids to the World Cup. That fourth place one will take on a finisher from Asia. 4 points, Panama's ahead with 5, then Costa Rica with 7, then Mexico with 10. Mexico, I think, probably finishes atop this whole thing unless they somehow go in the tailspin like they did last time at Azteca and can't win games at home, which It's Mexico. It's El Tri. So
it's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, anything could happen.
I don't know, man. They didn't look good against Croatia.
They didn't. How do you manage these games, Ben, if you're Bruce Arena?
I think you're trying to win both, but I think the more important game, honestly, is the Trinidad and Tobago game. You have to win all your home games from now on. Mm-hmm. So you need those 12 points from the home games. You already got 1 point on the road. You just need one or two more points on the road for the rest. And if you get into Mexico, great, but you're probably not. And it's a game that all U.S. fans want to win, but it's not the most important game in terms of the advancement to the World Cup.
It hurts me to say this, but Ben is 100% correct. The Trinidad game is as big a must win as the Honduras game was a couple of months ago, and if the U.S. win that, they will reasonably expect to go into the next set of qualifiers in September, still in fourth place, but with some breathing room between fourth and fifth. So they will have set themselves up to have that last four game run in, where at worst they're going to end up in the playoff series, which isn't great. But given how we started the hexagonal, it's good enough for this point. So I think you play your absolute best team against Trinidad and Tobago, and then you figure out who's out of gas 3 days later, and you just throw out what you can against Mexico. If that means no John Brooks, who tends to struggle in Central America or in heat, that's fine, because Omar Gonzalez isn't going to be intimidated by playing at the Azteca. If it means you only use Bobby Wood for 60 minutes against Trinidad and Tobago, or only for 60 minutes against Mexico, that's fine as well. You figure out what to do as you sort of go along, because the only thing that really matters is getting the 3 points at home.
Absolutely. As I said, Mexico on top, Costa Rica, Panama, U.S., Honduras, and then Trinidad and Tobago. So you got to get that win at home against the bottom feeder right now in the hex. The other games in that first round here of this two-game international break in CONCACAF, Costa Rica and Panama in San Jose, Mexico, Honduras, then Panama, Honduras, Costa Rica, Trinidad and Tobago finish it off on that second round of games. The U.S. and Mexico will actually play just 4 days, a couple days afterwards, 3 days. Now my math is coming together slowly here. 3 days afterwards, June 8th to 11th, the other teams will get a couple more days. That's because Confederations Cup issues with the scheduling. Bruce Arena said, hey, look, it's a disadvantage for both of us. We'll try to take an advantage of it. We know Tim Howard is going to be the goalkeeper. Bruce Arena says he's the number one. Doyle, you say we got to put out the best team possible against Trinidad and Tobago. What is that team? What does it look like in your mind?
Howard in goal, left to right along the back line. It's Viafania, Brooks, Cameron, and DeAndre Yedlin, Bradley and Alejandro Bedoya in central midfield, Fabian Johnson on one wing, Pulisic on the other, and right now Jozy Altidore and Clint Dempsey up top. I think Bobby Wood has a role to play, but he struggled mightily down the stretch with Hamburg, only one goal in his last 15 games, and he's been having to take painkillers for his knee. He's being held together by a thread here. So I think that's the group that you go with. I choose Bedoya over Acosta just because I think Bedoya's experience can be telling in a game like this, and will have enough in attack with Johnson on one wing, Pulisic on the other, and then Dempsey and Altidore up top.
Have we seen that group together in a way that we can really kind of predict what that attack might look like? I'm specifically thinking of that front four in Johnson, Pulisic, Jozy, and Dempsey. I'm not sure I know exactly how that's going to function.
Well, we've had – remember, the best game the U.S. played last cycle was Johnson at left midfield with Dempsey and Jozy up top against Panama. And now you take that three who have some chemistry together, and then you put – Pulisic on the other. And look, Pulisic he's a genius. He fits in no matter what system or what formation or who you put him alongside. The kid is he's a Landon Donovan level intellect in terms of how he fits in and understands the game. So I have no worries about that. I do have some worries about John Brooks, who was not great down the stretch for for Hertha Berlin, and maybe he's playing through a couple injuries. That would be about the only spot that really, really concerns me.
John Brooks rumored to be the target of a massive bid from a fellow Bundesliga team, barely by the skin of their teeth, a fellow Bundesliga team. Wolfsburg coming after him. The reports are 17 million plus euros to make that move. Just barely stayed in the top flight, but a team that was in the Champions League just a few seasons ago. Yeah, has
it's the Bundesliga. Things shift radically every season. You could see Wolfsburg back in the top six next year.
We will see what happens with that move there. That's the roster, of course. Games coming up quick and fast. We'll preview all those. We'll talk about all those at length. We will also put together a U.S.-Mexico special ahead of that game at Azteca. So if you've had any unique experiences with U.S.-Mexico, with this incredible rivalry, maybe you were at Azteca, maybe you feel the push and the pull within your own family of those loyalties, hit us up via email, via Twitter, the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0-MLS. Be a part of our show. We'll talk about that all next week. Let's talk about the U.S. U-20s. The senior guys, they're trying to qualify for the World Cup. The U-20s are in one, and they just won Group F out in South Korea, a 1-1 draw with Saudi Arabia. It was maybe not the result that they had hoped for, but it's the result that they needed, and that's what matters. Cameron Carter-Vickers got a red card in this one, two yellow cards, one that didn't even look like a foul. That's a tough break because he'll be suspended for that knockout round game against New Zealand. Also out for that one, Derek Jones and Aaron Herrera, I think, if I had to remember right. Look, Todd Ramos got them through the group, Doyle, in the way that they needed to. They performed when it mattered. They got a big win against Senegal to get those 3 points. They came back against Ecuador. Props for that. Now it all comes down to business. They're going to take on a New Zealand team that I think that most people would expect them to beat. Waiting on the other side is Venezuela with Yanhel Herrera, who the captain of the Venezuelan team, NYCFC player, scored the game winner against Japan in their round of 16 game, big-time talent. The U.S. have a chance here, though, to make a run. Will they? Can they? How will they if they do?
Well, they should beat New Zealand regardless, and no disrespect to the Kiwis, who've done a good job of being a solid defensive team, but they've just lost a couple of their better players to the Confederations Cup. So this is actually a somewhat depleted New Zealand squad. So the U.S. should be able to get the job done there. What happens against Venezuela, I don't know, because Venezuela has been excellent in this tournament. So even a full-strength U.S. would be hard-pressed. But there are, you know, Tom Ramos didn't pick the squad I would have picked, but he still has some options with this team. Could put Justin Glad out at right back, bring Tommy Redding back into central defense. That's how you replace Carter Vickers and Herrera. Bring Eric Williamson back into the starting central midfield role and drop Tyler Adams back as a pure number six, which that's not what he's played so far this tournament. So he does have some options. The U.S. should have enough raw talent to get past New Zealand, regardless of the suspensions.
And if they do get past New Zealand, then Venezuela's been killing it. First of all, Yanhel Herrera.
Yanhel Herrera has been arguably the best player in this tournament.
And it obviously needs to be noted that they will have two more days rest than the U.S., which is a huge factor in these kind of tournaments. So, you know, let's see if they can get the win against New Zealand. And then Venezuela is going to be really, really tough.
Not Venezuela. Not getting ahead of ourselves. We're going to count these eggs before they're hatched here. New England on Thursday. If you want to watch this one, you got to wake up early. That's the deal with this tournament. South Korea, 7 a.m. FS1 and Telemundo. The U.S. taking on New Zealand in the round of 16 at the U20 World Cup. Check that one out. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it later that day, I guess. I'll have to wake up early on Thursday. I wasn't planning on that, but I'll get it done, as I'm sure that you will at home. Before we get out of here and get into the Hot Take Hotline, Canada naming their roster for a June 13th match against Curaçao at BMO Field in BMO Field. It's not in BMO.
Saputo.
Yeah, in Montreal. I was like, that doesn't mix. That doesn't make sense. 14 names from MLS on Octavio Zambrano's 27-man roster for this one. It's basically an opportunity to him get some looks before the Gold Cup. That's a big tournament coming up this summer for them. You look at it, Doyle. You've got some names in here that you know we like, the Raheem Edwards of the world. Will Johnson's back. Jonathan Soria's back. Russell Tybert. Patrice Bernier, got to love that one. Jackson Hamill, Kyle Larin, Tazon Ricketts. The forward line is going to come out of MLS, most likely. Kwame Awuwa, that's the one you're jacked up about, though, right? A little UConn love?
We got two UConn players on this team, yeah, with him and Kyle Larin. So I think that bodes well for them. But, you know, no Jay Chapman. I do think that's a mistake.
Drink.
Huge mistake.
Everyone drink.
From Octavio Zambrano.
Yeah,
huge.
Massive.
But I do like this Canada team. They have a lot of talent, and we're all at this point, I'm waiting for it, and I know you guys are too, and I assume all Canadian fans are as well, just waiting to see what Ballou, Jean-Yves Tabla, and Alphonso Davies choose in terms of who they represent at the full international level.
Yeah, big question marks there. Canada getting prepped for that Gold Cup. Would be great to see them have a big tournament. I think it would be great for MLS, for North America, for CONCACAF in general to have them kind of push into that conversation, maybe start challenging for the heck. Some good young talent there. Let us know what you think about that U.S. roster from Bruce Arena, what's going to go down upcoming in the Hex and the U-20s at Extra Time Radio, Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com via email or the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0MLS. We're going to go to break. Stick with us.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Alejandro Bedoya from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, into the mailbag, the Hot Take Hotline. You can reach us, as always, anytime, in the stadium, at home, I don't know, on the road, wherever you're listening to Extra Time Radio, 401-206-0MLS. Of course, always via email or Twitter, which are kind of the classics, which we've forgotten a little bit, and I miss them. So hit us up there if you have something to say, extratime at MLSsoccer.com, at Extra Time Radio on Twitter, if that's more your style. Let's get right into it, guys. We'll start with the Purple Lion out in Orlando.
Hey, fellas, it's the giant Purple Lion. Do you think Kaká is best used as a super sub? And do you think the diamond is still useful with our team? That's the question burning on a lot of Orlando City fans' minds, and it's burning on mine too. Anyway, vamos Orlando.
There you have it, guys. Kaká comes back, and the results dry up for Orlando. Doyle, are those related, or are we looking too deep there?
I think they're a little bit related, but not as solidly as people kind of want it to be. Orlando overperformed the first month and a half of the season, largely because Joe Bendick was superhuman, and now that he's become something less than that, the results have gone away. They do have that. They have had that super packed schedule that I mentioned, and I think that has taken a toll on them as well. Kyle Larin's gone a little bit cold in front of net, and that's obviously hurt. But I do think that Kaká is a liability defensively, not to the point that he's unplayable, but certainly to the point where I think he's been better served, and Orlando City have been better served bringing him off the bench as a second half game changer. If I was Jason Christ, I would go in a different direction there. I might also go in a different direction from the diamond. I think long term it probably makes sense with that team, but short term right now they just keep getting blown up. And I thought they looked better at times earlier this year, playing that sort of 4-4-2 with an inverted guy on the left and Matias Perez Garcia inverted on the right.
Orlando DC United, that'll take you into Wednesday. Good match for you there. We're gonna have to go Rapids Rabbi here because I keep throwing his name out there when you talk about the Rapids. They did win 1-0 this week, and congratulations to them. This is from the week before. I think it still holds true. Stick with him here. It's quite the screed.
Hey guys, this is Rapids Rabbi. Andrew keeps dropping my name during ETR sessions, and I don't really understand why. I feel like I'm obligated to respond to all of the questions around the Colorado Rapids, which is totally legitimate. So I don't have a hot take. I have a cold take. A cold take like a cadaver on ice that the Rapids season has become.
Oy.
I am calling, I guess, to apologize. I have almost certainly been wrong about this team. The Colorado Rapids of 2017 are not good and will not likely recover and make the playoffs.
By my finger math, it looks like we need 40 points in the next 23 games, which is 1.74 goals, points per clip.
Yep, probably not going to happen.
That's pretty much a win or a draw every game for the rest of the year. The Rapids currently have only 7 points, and the MLS record for unbeaten streaks in
now,
season
by the way,
is 19. So you do the math. The odds that we go on a 23-game unbeaten streak are probably, Ben Bear, around 0%. The fan base is, of course, fairly resigned to the fact that nothing's getting better and we are not going to be good this season, no matter who comes in the July transfer window.
I got to tell you, you know who I want in the July transfer window? Rapids Rabbi. Let's get this guy on the show. Let's let this man cook because he seems to have a better grasp on guarantees and percentages than certain researchers that we employ here at MLS Digital.
Oh, that is hot. That is a hot take. What do you have to say about that, Bimber? We had to cut the Rapids Rabbi short. Basically, his end point was, if you guys never talk about the Rapids again this year, we'll understand why. Well, that's not going to be the case.
That's not happening.
Congratulations to Courtney
off
Ford.
The pits.
Congratulations to Courtney Ford, his first professional goal. But we appreciate
shout out to John Hudson, who almost had a podcast about the Rapids. He almost did it. Doyle.
He's struggling.
You literally
here.
Never have any idea what you're talking about. So, you ask me for my opinions on stuff, and then you just like regurgitate them to the masses.
Oh,
so,
All it took was one rabbi with an affection for the Colorado Rapids to get this hot.
Guarantees and whatever. Just get out of here.
All right. Well, this is not the last time we will let Ben Bear cook. He will be back all the time, as always. But David Goss is coming back later this week. That's on Thursday. We will see you then. Big thanks to these guys. We'll see you on Thursday, folks. Adios. We'll be right back.